And here we are for our 7th installment on the Sacred Feminine series. hello, everybody, and good evening. So, I'm just going to fix everything. Tonight, we're going to a completely different continent. We're coming to the Americas, particularly North America. We've explored the goddesses from Africa, Asia, Middle East, and now it's turn to learn about a Native American goddess. All over the world, there's no matter what culture I'm looking at or faith, there's always a predominant goddess. And this week I chose to explore White Buffalo Calf Woman, or also known as White Buffalo Calf Maiden. She was a prophet. She was recognized as a prophet to the Lakota Native American. And she was sent here to unite all Native American nations. She's very important because some of her teaching are still alive today. She has many roots. Although she's mostly recognized as being of Lakota in her origins, her teachings, especially in regards to the sacred pipe, to peace, the control of emotion, is found in several different tribes all over America. Notably, when I did the research, I could find her in the Sioux culture, which is also synonym to Lakotas. Cheyenne, Algonquin, Blackfoot. So all these different groups of natives have in their origin story, the Buffalo Calf Women. It's one of the reasons why I picked her over another maybe significant goddess, because I can find her in many, many places, which means that either her teachings arrived very early on before the tribes started the splitting up and then adapting their culture to their way of life, or she did appear in many different instances to different people, different tribes all over America. So the most traditional story, and we will explore a few tonight, so you'll see the different types of story that is being retold about her and her influence. So it says either 19 generations ago, or some say 2,000 years ago. So how long is a generations? It's hard to calculate, but the existence of one of the things that she would have brought forth through the Lakota people is a specific pipe. This pipe would apparently been around for at least 2,000 years. There was a great famine at that time, and the chief of the Lakota sent out two men, to hunt for food. While the two men were traveling, they saw a white cloud in the distance, and from the cloud, or a dust cloud, depending on where I look at the story, sometimes it's a white cloud, sometimes it's a dust cloud, but they saw a woman appear out of the cloud. As they approach this apparition, this woman, they saw this beautiful, beautiful young Native woman in white clothing made of animal skin. Again, this varies. Some say it's buckskin, some say it's buffalo skin, but it was white clothing, hence the White Buffalo Calf Woman. She had dark hair, skin, and eyes, and one of the men was at the very sight of her, completely filled with lust for this woman. He approached her, and as they're approaching her, he tells his companion that he will attempt to claim her as a wife. However, in some stories, he also is said that he will disrespect her or take advantage of her, or the word being the translation meaning outrage, which could be translated into, if you outrage a woman, you rape her. So the companion says, you should be careful because she appears very special. She's out-of-worldly, and perhaps you should, you know, shouldn't do anything sacrilegious. That would be dangerous and disrespectful. But the other guy completely ignores it, follows his lust, and approach the woman, embrace the woman. And at this time, either another cloud or fog or a dust cloud wraps around this woman and this man. This goes on for a little while. And the other man is observing all this and has no idea what's going on. He can't see past this cloud. However, when the cloud or the mist disappears, the mysterious woman is still there, intact, with nothing, no arm had come to her. However, beside her was a pile of the bones, or just a pile of dust, of this man that was sacrilegious. So the other man, who remained polite and at a certain distance, was frightened. And he didn't know quite how to react. But the woman called him and says, "You can come. I have read your intent and your intentions and your thoughts. And I know that you intend me no harm. So it is safe for you to come into my circle or my space." So the woman spoke Lakota. And again, the tribes all had, although could understand each other, they all had their very typical local language. And so speaking Lakota, he felt that she was one of his people. And that's what made him trust her and move towards her. At this time, White Buffalo Calf Woman explained that she was a holy Wakan. Again, tonight I'll be using some of the Lakota vocabulary, so always, you know, in honor of the tradition, but I'll explain that this means having spiritual or supernatural power. And she explains that she's here to instruct his people how to rise again. And you have to understand, right? There was a great famine, so the people were dying, the tribe was disappearing, and so she was there to bring them back alive again. The scout promised that he would do as he was instructed, and so she told them to return to the encampment and tell the council of elders to prepare a feast for her and that she would arrive in 4 days. She did come after 4 days, and we will see tonight that she taught the Lakota 7 sacred ceremonies to protect Mother Earth and to restore them as people. And one of the specific tool that she gave them was the ceremonial pipe. So this is the most traditional story about the White Buffalo Calf Women. But why White Buffalo Calf Women? Was it just that she was dressed in white and what looked like buffalo skin? No, because after teaching them the ceremonies and being with them, she left. And she transformed into a buffalo of several colors. She transformed into a red buffalo, a black buffalo, some say a brown buffalo, and the last one was the white buffalo. This, we will see these four, the number four is extremely important to the Native American traditions. And so we will see why. But she promised to return, and her return would be announced by the birth of a white buffalo calf. And she would come back to bring unity and peace on earth. So as the sacred feminine, again, her role, she's mother of the tribe. She's guiding them and teaching them. And what she wants for them is unity and peace on earth. So she doesn't want them to take over the world. It's not about power. It's not about being rich. It's about living happily in peace. And so in the legends, she represents the spirit of the buffalo people. Now, this is interesting because then you have to ask yourself, who are the buffalo people? The buffalo people, a buffalo tribe, are in several tribes where they are mentioned. The Arikara tribe, the Comanche, the Dakota, the Mandan, the Pawnee, and the Sioux, Lakota. It would seem that at this point, White Buffalo Calf Women has been able to interact with several other tribes, and their interaction was recorded through the oral history, because the Native American didn't write down these stories. They were passed down orally from the most gifted people who could memorize these stories. And And this particular provenance of this buffalo tribe would be likely the oldest, the beginning of buffalo white calf women. It was at the time, the buffalo people were actually people and not animals. They would have wear huge horns on their heads and would be able to hold a ceremony where they would knock on a tree and have people come out of a tree. And they would hunt these humans, which were different than the buffalo people, and they would eat them. They were cannibals. One of those men who escaped that tree was survived and was hidden by buffalo calf women, who was a woman of the buffalo tribe. And she said, "We need to end this carnage. We need to end, my people need to stop doing this." And so the survivor said, "Well, how could I help? What could I do? There were more strength, there were more numbers, and he didn't have any tools to defend himself or change them or do anything." So white buffalo calf women hit him, hit his scent, and told him to start carving arrows and bows out of a tree. And she says, "Leave those by the tree." And once the buffalo will be hit by these arrows, the buffalo people will transform into actual buffaloes, animals. And so the man, not having much of a choice, did as he was told. Once it was time again to knock on the tree and allow these people to come out of the tree, the people shot all the buffalo tribe, and they were all transformed into buffalo. Buffalo calf women remained a woman who could transform at will between a buffalo and a woman. So this would be the first apparition of the buffalo calf women. So if we look at the teaching, she's saying that we shouldn't kill each other and we should not eat cannibals. We shouldn't be cannibals, basically. So an important lesson in civilizing the world and separating animals from humans. But then when she came to the Lakota people, she presented them with a pipe. With this pipe, she told them that the pipe would amplify the power of their prayers. She explained to them that we should understand that all things are the work of the Great Spirit. So she's explaining to, and this is beautiful. It actually kind of dawned on me today. She's a feminine goddess, but she's teaching men. All of the other goddesses that we explored so far in the series, it represents, like Kuan Yin and White Tara. They were there to help women know that they can achieve enlightenment, that they're at their space, their place. But the Native American honored the teaching of a goddess and were guided by her, which is explained that it was a more matriarchal society. So it made sense that a woman could be a teacher and a guide. So our country, our belief system has a huge influence on how we perceive the teaching that are being received. In America, being a matriarchal society, the teaching of the woman were received by the men as well. So it wasn't exclusively reserved to women alone. So now she explains that the Great Spirit is in all things. He's in the trees, he's in the grass, he's in the rivers, he's in the mountains, he's in all four-legged animals. He's in the winged birds and things that have wings. And even more important, we need to understand that he's also above all the things and the people. So we need to understand deeply in our hearts that the Great Spirit is in everything and above us, and we are all linked, we're all connected, we're all one. So she says, know the Great Spirit, and they will be, There will be a knowledge that will enter you, that you will act and live as he intends, because he's a part of you, so you can unite. So when we go into divine will and divine wisdom, this is what we mean. If you recognize that there is power in everything that you meet, then you meet everything with respect. When we say namaste, and we say the light that is in you, the divinity that is in you, is seen by me, and I salute that. She was teaching those very things. So she's not Buddhist. There was no influence from Buddhism or Asia or anything like that. And yet she's in North America teaching the people here the same principle. The Lakota word for prayer is to call for aid or to claim relationship with. Because as you're praying, you're bridging the gap between you and what you're praying for. You're bridging the gap between nature, between animals, between everything that exists. You are calling to what's in the divine that is in them, that is also in you, to work together. During ceremonies, when I do blessings, we usually end by... I will smudge someone or do a ceremony, and I will say, all my relations. Meaning that not just me, but everything that is connecting to me is part of this blessing. Because we are all one. We're all united. And this is why it's sacred. This is why people need to be respectful and quiet during that short time where the blessing occurs. Because you have to find a connection that is in you, connecting to me and to everything else that surrounds you, that is alive and breathes and grows, because you're connecting to the Great Spirit. So she's trying to teach them to unite, not to fight a great war, not to overcome and become a great dynasty, but to unite in peace. And so she presents the pipe. The pipe, to very recently... it existed. So this pipe is real. Not a lot of people get to see the pipe. As far as I know, there's no actual pictures of the pipe. But it's been passed down. So the holder of the pipe is the wisest elder amongst the council, leading the Lakotas, who's the holder. The bowl of the pipe is made of red stones, so it represents flesh and blood of the whole of people. There's a wooden stem, and that represents the trees and the plants and all the things growing on earth. At the very center, there's a buffalo, that so you can sip the pipe and the legs will hold the pipe up, and that represents all animals. There's 12 feathers attached to the pipe. The 12 feathers represent the spotted eagle, and everything that has wings and flies in the air. The smoke that actually comes out of the pipe represents the sacred wind, the breath that carries the prayer to the Great Spirit, which is called Wakan Tanka. And then she told them how to hold the pipe. Because the pipe is there to guide you, and how to offer this pipe to the earth, to the sky, and the four directions. The pipe was to show them how to act, because they couldn't hold the pipe in anger, they couldn't hold the pipe in jealousy, or because the pipe amplifies your thoughts, your prayer, right? And so she explained to them, because we're all connecting, when you are praying for something, you're also being supported by all creation in your prayer. So it gives a lot of power to your prayer, because the idea of smoking the pipe is to connect yourself to your divinity, connect yourself to the Great Spirit, and then together ask for what you need. And prayers could be moments of gratitude as well. And so as you're grateful, everything around you is grateful. The pipe is usually held in the crook of the left arm. And if it's packed with tobacco, even though if it's not smoking yet, it is said to be powerful and affect all living things. So you must be prepared when you're holding the pipe, to always be calm, always be wanting the highest good of everything and everyone. Excuse me. And so, Wakantanka, the Great Spirit, dwells above, like an eagle in the sky. And this direction's color is considered to be blue. The Earth's, our mother and grandmother, from whom we receive all the nourishment and everything we need to live, the color is green. So this is important because when we'll get to the colors later, you'll understand that these colors, the colors are just as meaningful as their writing for them. It was quick and a representation of something that everybody understood. So blue and green. The pipe is in between those, in all four directions. So that sacred place within, the place where I talked about this divinity that lives inside you, like last week when we talked to Sophia, she's the spark, the divine spark. It's this sacred place that the soul will realize this relationship of oneness with the universe and the power that this holds. So she's teaching all of this. And in a different legend to the Caddo people, White Buffalo Calf Woman is a woman who is, again, young, beautiful. And this young hunter goes on a journey because he is looking for food for his people. And he meets her. And he asks her, you know, they have a conversation, they talk. And she explains to him that she could be his wife, but she would have to do what she says. And he says, well, as long as you're not asking me to harm anyone, then I would be okay with it. And so they return to his village and he introduces her to the family and they get married. They live quite happily, but eventually she says, it's time to go to my people. And as they leave and they go near to the place where he found her, she rolls three times on the ground and turns into a buffalo. And she's like, now you do the same. And she teaches this young man, whose name is Braveness, not to be easily angered. She says, my people, the buffaloes, who are now living as buffaloes, animals, will be angry at you because I chose you as my husband. And many of them wanted me as their wives. So you must be calm. You must overlook the being taunted or being made fun of. You must resist and stay calm. She's like, otherwise, they will hack you to pieces. So remain calm. He goes through this and he survives and eventually they return to his tribe. It's time again, a year later, to go visit her people. But she says, the young men will challenge you and you will have to win the challenge. Quite desperate because he's not a real buffalo and he's not as strong as the other buffalo. He doesn't know what to do. And so he prays as he's walking in the plains. And when he does so, the wind spirit comes to his aid. So she teaches this in the story. It teaches the Caddo people and the Lakota people that if you pray when you're in need, instead of being alone in your sorrow, you will receive assistance. And so the wind says to him, you will not win this race unless you have help. And so he points out to him some medicinal herbs. And he also points out to him the sacred earth, a sacred area. And he says, as you're losing the race, if you throw these sacred herbs behind you, you will gain power and strength. And then if you throw the sacred earth behind you, again, you will gain strength. And in the third of the race, when he's almost at the finish line, but he's going to be beaten, he again asks for the wind spirit to give him strength so that he can finish the last leg of the race and win. So, although she taught seven sacred ceremonies, she was the bringer of medicinal herbs, of recognizing sacred places as sacred and holding them as sacred, as they hold power. They have strength, and they will strengthen you by honoring and respecting these places. And so, While she, after she taught about the sacred ceremony, she talked about the passing of four ages of time. She spoke of the four directions, and she each gave those directions a color. Now, depending on exactly which tribe we're looking at, the colors vary. So it could be black, brown, red, white. It could be white, yellow, black, and red. It could also be yellow, red, blue, and black or white. And so these vary. However, we will use tonight's explanation using the Lakota Cultural Center's color and explanation and follow their guideline. The four also means the four races of humankind. So what do I mean by that? Well, there's the white people, there's the black people, there's the red people, which is the indigenous of America, and there's usually the yellow people. Some say there was a fifth one, would be the brown. But in the origin stories, those are the four that are recognized. Interestingly enough, although White Buffalo Calf Woman is mainly remembered as a, if you, in a lot of the research that I did, she's mainly at 90% associated with the Lakotas. The Hopi people, which are in the southwest of the United States, also talk of four worlds, four times, four ages. There's the world that was destroyed by fire. There's the one that was destroyed by ice. There's the one that was destroyed by a flood. And then the present world. So it's interesting because we know that, you know, the Jews say there was a flood and Noah survived. And this flood story is also in the American lore and myths. So destroyed by ice, how would they know that? How could they know that a world was destroyed by ice? Now we know, through research and knowledge and scientific finding, we know there was a Great Ice Age, that the ice came on so suddenly that some animals were frozen in ice with still undigested food in their stomach. And so it's not like they froze bit by bit. Everything froze all at once, and the content of their food in their stomach was still there. So somehow, the Native Americans were able to receive information from White Buffalo Calf Women about these different ages, and instructed them that they should make Earth more like heaven. What does that mean? It means that you need to respect nature. You shouldn't overkill animals. You should take what you need and leave the rest. There was a recent movie that I saw with Tom Hanks, and he arrives in a town, and this white man is killing all these buffaloes and just skinning them and just taking the skin and leaving all this meat to rot in the sun. To the Native American, this was terrible waste. It's terrible tragedy because it offsets the balance of nature. You're taking what you don't need. And so eventually what that will create is you will create a void. You will create a need. We tend to not think very far. We think about ourselves, and these thoughts are usually led by greed and by or by lust. And this is what prevents us from saying, this is all I need. This is all I take for now. And have faith that when I need it again, it will be there. It will be present. And we'll be able to have access to what we need. So, in the four directions, create a wheel. This is called the medicine wheel. The medicine wheel, although is often represented as a flat disc, is an evolution for the Native people. And as you complete the circle, then at the end, you complete your circle by rising, by going up into your wisdom. And then you begin the cycle again and always learning more and developing new perspective. Some people know this because you will have read different books. And then you say, I'm reading the book again. And this time I'm finding new information. I'm understanding new things. Yes, because as you're knowledge grows and your wisdom grows and your experience grows, then you start to see other aspects of the story that you didn't see before. And so this medicine circle is to be seen that way, as a circle that you travel, but you're not traveling in circle and not going anywhere. You're rising, okay? The first direction that you usually will always start with is in the east. And I want you to remember that you start in the east and you're traveling, but halfway between east and south, you'll be in southeast. So part of the east is not a full 90 degrees, and when you get to the south, all of a sudden you're in the south. Not quite so much. You do 45 degrees, so your beginning is in the east, but when you're ending again in the east, that's when you're rising up. The east is the direction where the sun gets up. The meaning of the sun rising in the east is where the new begin a new day. So new beginnings will start there. It's also that understanding, the light helps us see things the way they really are, right? In the darkness, you're like, ooh, what is that? And then the light shines on and you say, oh, that's a pile of clothes on the floor. But in the dark, you don't know. So the east is this opening of the eyes, is the new awareness that you gain. And it stands for the wisdom of helping people live good lives. So it's a good time in the east to ask the Great Spirit for wisdom and understanding. And that's more when you're completing, when you're coming all the way back around, you're like, wow, I've done this entire journey. Now I've learned from all the directions. I'm back in the east again. Now help me summarize this up and learn from this so I can go up. Yes? Depending on which tradition, some tradition would associate the east with air, usually, because it's associated with the eagle and the taking flight and the sun in the sky. It's a little bit confusing with the Lakota. It looks like it means more earth as the sun rises from the earth. Now, in the south, it's the southern sky. And so the Lakota people were people, the tribes were living in the plains, right? So everything is explained based on their surrounding and their environment. So what happens at midday is when the sun is at the highest. It stands for warmth and growing, a period of growth. The sun's rays are drawing the life from the earth, meaning that without sun, the things wouldn't grow. So it's said that all living things come from the south. In a way, because it's associated to the sun at high noon when it's the hottest and the warmest, this could be also associated with the element of fire. Now we travel on our way to the west. There on the west, that's where the sun sets. It's the end of the day, but it's also in symbology signifies the end of life. So the color is black. And Black Helk, which is a man I'll refer to quite a bit in this talk because he wrote a magnificent book explaining a lot of the ceremonies and the teachings of buffalo calf women. Towards the setting sun of his life, meaning towards the end of his life. The great thunderbird lives in the west and sends thunder and rain from that direction. So the water is associated with the west. It represents rain, lakes, streams, river. Because you can't live without water, the west is a vital part of life. That's the meaning of the west. And then finally, we go to the north. And the north color is red. The north brings the cold and the harsh winds, which is why it's different. Normally, the air is in the east, but here, being that they're associating the white cold and the harsh winds and the winter season with the north, then the symbology here shifts, and that's why the air is here and the earth is in the east. In the blanket of the north, in the blanket of snow, in the winter, this is the time where the people will face their most, they need to endure the most, and they have to be patient the most. It's a season that they must live and go through. But especially in a buffalo, if you've ever seen a buffalo in a storm, they'll face the wind and they don't care. it's a time for hardships and discomfort, meaning in the cycle of the four direction that it's normal to endure hardships. It's normal to experience discomfort because it represents the trials that you must have in order to grow, right? It also helps as a cleansing. When you struggle, that's when you start asking yourself questions. I've seen some people who never struggled. They not really, you know. They come from a good family. They always had food to eat. They always had to live in the same house. They went to school. They weren't bullied. They did well at school. They didn't struggle to get great grades, or great grades weren't important, but they did just fine. And then all of a sudden, because they never had any incidents, they never really grew. Something happens that most of us will say, oh, well, you know, this too shall pass. But for them, it's the end of the world because they're completely unprepared. Without having had a struggle, we are weak. So we must stop seeing ourselves as unlucky or as poor little me. Instead, you really need to understand that these events made you grow. They made you stronger. They made you know who you are. They made you realize how much potential there was, how much power there was, and how you can overcome different difficulties in your life. This brings me to the four values of the Lakota people. These were instored by white buffalo calf women. So even though I'm presenting them as the value of the Lakota, they became their values because that's what they were taught. Okay. So one of the first, and I love this. If you have a piece of paper and a pen, these are the four things you want to write down. The four values is generosity, kinship, fortitude, and wisdom. These are the things they valued the most. Not power, not position, not money, not being rich or having five horses. They valued most important in their lives that guided their wisdom of how to live their lives was generosity, kinship, fortitude, and wisdom. Which again goes with the four directions, right? Because wisdom is in the east, fortitude would be in the north, kinship and generosity would be in the south and the west. So what do they mean by generosity? And I'm not even going to attempt to say the Lakota word, although I have it, but I don't want to destroy it. So it means to contribute to the well-being of one's people by sharing and giving freely. Meaning, this is your community, not just, it doesn't say your wife or your family. It says one's people, so your entire tribe. The sharing, it wasn't just about objects or possession, but also emotions like sympathy, compassion, and kindness. Think about that for a second. Let's think about it. You're being generous with sympathy, compassion, and kindness. It blows my mind that that's what generosity can be. Right? It's not about just sharing a meal with someone. Sometimes it's about taking the time to sit with someone and talk, listening to them, hearing them, hugging them. That's also being generous. It's a gift of personal time. The gift of yourself to another person by putting aside your ambitions or your worries or your what you're busy at and saying, no, this person needs me right now and I'll be there for them. The act of giving and not expecting anything in return in the Lakota way means that you're a better person, and that will automatically make you happy. There's also something called giveaway in the Lakota society. When it's in a very important in the family, important event, you will gather some belongings and you will offer it. You'll set it out and any person can in the community can come and take something. The Lakota saying says, what you give away, you keep. What you keep, you lose. And so as they entered this community of sharing, there's a sense that they will never lack anything. Do you understand? If you have 10 pens, well, you only need one and maybe a spare just in case, and you put the other 8 ones out there, you know that eventually if you need a pen, someone will have a pen for you. But at least now, everybody has a chance to write instead of just you holding on to those 10 pens. So it gives an opportunity for everyone to be equal, to be on the same footing. So no matter what race, nationality, or tribe, when we're reaching out to our community like this, the Lakota people believe that because you can become less focused on you, you become more in harmony with the world. Well, yes, that makes sense because you're now in touch with your community. You now know the pulse of your community. You know what your community needs, and you're a part of filling that void and filling out the needed, what's needed. There's a cute movie on kids, and it's about robots. I think that's the name of the movie, Robots, where the guy keeps saying, find a need, fill a need. So, meaning, don't think about yourself. Don't invent things for yourself. Invent things that would benefit the most people around you. And look around, and you'll see who needs help at what they need. Now, the next quality, the next value, is kinship. Kinship was one of the most important values, especially because it blankets extended family. By extended family, it's the idea that we are all connected, and so therefore you live in harmony with everyone, because everyone in the tribe becomes family, and people from outside the tribe can be adopted and become, as a through the adoption, a member of the tribe. It is considered true wealth to have a large family. And so even though you might be a single daughter, or you might feel that your family is not really big, through this process of adoption, you could grow your family. And this is how truly wealth was measured. It wasn't measured in how much treasure you had, but more in how many people wanted to be part of your family. So you could join this family by birth or by marriage or by the adoption. And this, once you become a member of the family, of the tribe, then no matter where you travel, no matter where you are welcome as family. You are recognized as part of the tribe. The reason why they adopted this kinship is that because the men would go hunting, or they might go to war and they may not come back, it ensured that the women and the children of these men were looked after through this extended family. No one was left behind. No one was left to starve. No one was all of a sudden having to provide what they couldn't provide. You looked after everyone that was in your circle. Isn't that beautiful? I think it's marvelous. The next value is fortitude. As I said, in the direction of the north is where you face obstacles, is where you face difficult times. And the Lakota people really embrace these times, facing these challenges, because you develop your courage, your strength, and your confidence in these times. Fortitude is the ability to come to terms when you have a problem and accept them and find a solution, right? Being able to say, okay, this is the issue, and not running away, facing the issue face on and saying, okay, how do we fix this? One of the first lessons that Lakota children are being taught was that self-control and self-restraint in the presence of parents or adults. They would master these abilities through games and creative play. And if someone was better at something than you did, you didn't envy them. It wasn't someone to beat. It was now a role model for you to follow. You see how different it is from the way that in the modern world, in Western society, the way we live, right? We've got to beat this one. All the games are centered around there's a winner. There's a race. There's a winner. There's always got to be someone on top. And you always got to try and beat that person. Instead here, The Lakota Society was viewing someone as better than you as someone that can teach you and guide you on how to become better. So it wasn't a competition. It was not about superiority. It was about making everyone good. So everybody, with enough practice and enough lessons and enough work, could all become that good. And there was enough place for everybody in the podium to be that good eventually. Fortitude requires patience, it requires perseverance, it requires strength of mind. And those are all qualities that we know that through the sacred feminine, we need to develop. We need to strengthen our mental body. Having confidence in oneself makes all the difference in the world. Why would certain people do something and be successful at it? Well, because they believe they can be successful. If other people doubt they can be successful, they're not even going to put the time or effort or even try, right? In order to succeed in the way of life that the Lakota had in the plains, someone had to overcome their fear. And they had to proceed in spite of that fear. In spite of the winter coming, in spite of not being able to find food, in spite of famine, you had to believe that if you kept looking, if you kept at it, you would succeed eventually. Which brings us to the last value, the value of wisdom. The knowledge and wisdom of old people was very, very important for the well-being of the Lakota people. Why? Because they held the experience. Let's not go left here. There's nothing to the left. Let's go right. There's water in that direction. The knowledge of the past season and what to do when someone gets sick or what to do when there's a famine or what to, you know, preserve some seed because, you know, we might need them, or making special food to dry up the food so that if it's a long winter, we'll have food to survive. All of those things, the insight that was gained over a person's lifetime was this wisdom that they cherish. The old people were part of the community. They were elders. They were part of the council. They were asked for their opinion. Their knowledge was respected. Wisdom is understanding, in this case, natural patterns, natural processes. It means to detect the finer things that may be hidden to others, that comes through experienced eyes. That's why the elders became mentors. That's why they became guides. That's why they often took on the younger people. While the young men or men in their early age had to go hunting, had to go to war, the children, the raising and the growth of these children was entrusted to the older people, because they had the patience to deal with young children. They could repeat things over and over. And that also brought the value of these people to the young people, who respected them and honored them. It's a whole society built around this, yes? The ultimate wisdom in the Lakota way is that you're able to incorporate the secret way of life into your own life. And this is something I've been repeating over and over and over again. You can learn many things. You can read many books. But if you never take the time to apply what you've learned or what you just read to your daily life, it's snow on a spring day under a full sun. It melts away. Wisdom is truly to realize, I was told many, many times I should meditate every day, and I haven't done it yet. Maybe I should give it a try, right? And so to the Lakota people, it's really to incorporate the sacred way of life of these four values into your daily life and respect and honor all life. Now, I'm going to be talking about the seven sacred ceremony that white buffalo women... And I say woman, but it could be maiden. They're interchangeable because she was so young and beautiful. But I think it's important that I do two disclaimers before we proceed. I will explain the spiritual value of the ceremonies, but I will not explain what actually takes place in the ceremony. Why is that? Because the Lakota Summit number 5 was held in 1993, so almost 28 years ago. And this is the decision that was made at the time. The Lakota Summit responded to what they believe was a frequent desecration of the Sun Dance, another Lakota sacred ceremony in U.S. and Canadian Lakota, Dakota, Nakota nations, held an international gathering of about 500 representatives from 40 different people and bands of the Lakotas. And they unanimously passed the following declaration of war against exploiter of the Lakota spirituality. So understand that I am following this edict, and so I will not reveal here the actual ceremony, even though I know what takes place, because I don't want to go against this edict. But they're saying, whereas sacrilegious sun dance for non-Indians are being conducted by charlatans and cult leaders who promote abominable and obscene imitation of our sacred Lakota sun dance rites, we hereby and henceforth declare war against all person who persist in exploiting, abusing, and misrepresenting the sacred tradition and spiritual practices of the Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota people. All right, so that's a direct quote from the exactly what was said. Why did this... did this happen? Because some people are charging a lot of money for vision quests or for putting together the Sundance and bringing tourists, asking for money, but they're not doing it properly. And it's to the native people, it's a disrespect from the highest regard to their beliefs. And I respect that. So I will explain the spiritual nature of the ceremonies, but I won't explain how to perform one. So if anybody is looking for information on how to do that, I won't be the helper. There's also, you should know, as of 2003, a banning of non-native to sacred ceremonies. The 19th generation keeper of the sacred white buffalo calf pipe of Lakota asked. So this is where the 19th generation comes from. It's been 19 generations since the pipe has been passed down. So that's how they dated the giving of the pipe, because he's the 19th generation keeper of the sacred white buffalo calf pipe of the Lakota, asked non-Indigenous people to stop attending the Sundance. He stated that all can pray and support, but that only Indigenous people should approach the altars. The statement was supported by keepers of the sacred bundles and the traditional spiritual leader of from the Cheyenne, Dakota, Lakota, and Nakota nations. We issued a proclamation that non-Indigenous people would be banned from sacred altars and the 7 sacred rites, including especially the Sun Dance, effective March 9, 2003. So there's no way for white people or any other people that are not of the Lakota people or adopted into the family to now attend these ceremonies, which are held, as you can see, in very high regards, still to this day being performed, and in the spiritual spirit of the thing, right? So I need to honor and respect that, yes? White buffalo calf women was saying that to bring peace, we must be willing to forgive and have compassion for everyone involved, including ourselves, and accept when an apology is being offered. I think that's very important. If someone has the courage to come to you and apologize for something they've done, we should understand that in the Lakota way, that meant that they actually meant this apology. And so it was to bring peace that we would accept the apology and let bygones be bygones. The 7 ceremonies that were taught by white buffalo calf women was the Inipi, which is the purification lodge or sweat lodge. Then, I can't say that word, it's crying for a vision or pleading for a vision. So it would be the equivalent of what some would refer to as a vision quest. Then the actual sun dance. The making of relatives, so how do you adopt into your family? that was part of a ceremony taught by white folk half women, the female puberty ceremony, and the throwing the ball ceremony. And finally, the soul keeping ceremony. Each part of the pipe is symbolic of the relation from the nature to the elements, to the humans, to the spirit being, and maintaining this cycle in the universe. And so the pipe, why is the pipe so important? Because it becomes part of all the ceremonies that she teaches them. So we'll start with the Purification Lodge. In the Purification Lodge, it actually means, the word Inipi means to live again. It's a purification rite that is necessary for any of the other ceremonies. So you would start at the Purification Lodge in order to go on a vision quest, or in order to do the sun dance, or in order to do anything else. You would purify yourself in the Sweat Lodge. Now, the Sweat Lodge are built in a particular fashion for the Lakota people. And the prayers offered inside of the Purification Lodge draw on all the power of the universe. So whatever is asked for in there, even the elements, the earth, water, fire, and air, become a part of this prayer. So before any major undertaking, you had to purify your body and get that strength and that power that was granted to you to perform whatever else you were going to go and perform. The Sweat Lodge represents your inner world. Now remember, it's sacred feminine wisdom, yes? And what's the sacred feminine about? It's about recognizing our divine self that's hidden inside. So this time that you spend in the Purification Lodge allows you to be in the equivalent of the womb, and gives your soul a rebirth, or connecting to your soul, which in a way gives it birth, yes? Eventually, the participants will finish the ceremony. Now, this is the part where I skip what happens, yes? But they come out of the Sweat Lodge from the dark, because it's dark inside, to the light outside. And it represents being born. It represents being free. And all that is impure, you sweat it through your pores, and it remains inside the lodge. Interestingly enough, in the Native tradition, women still menstruating don't, first of all, do not enter the Sweat Lodge. But the reason why they don't need to is because they're purifying every time they're menstruating. And this I only found in one spot, and I thought it was very interesting. The fire of their menstruation inside of a woman cleans the impurity, and the impurity get evacuated through the menstrual flow. So women are welcome in the Sweat Lodge, but only before or after. They no longer have their own mechanism of purification. It's difficult because there's so many tribes, so many cultures, but in some tribes, only the men would enter together, and then only the women would enter together. It would be very separate, but in some, they could be mixed. But specifically for the Lakota, I couldn't find that information, so I don't know. The next sacred ceremony taught by white buffalo calf women. So what can we learn from that, by the way? It means that you need to purify your body. You need to find the time to connect with yourself. So none of us will have access to a sweat lodge unless you're Native. And so I would say that the closest thing you could do to that, it would be time that you spend in meditation, time that you spend on your own, connecting with your feelings and trying to being able to free from yourself to face this without, you know, feeling already abated when you're having to face a difficult situation. The next one resembles so much what the Druids and the Celts do in a vision quest, that the similarity is so striking that, again, I'm shocked, because we're talking about an entire different continent that has nothing to do with the Celts visiting them. There was a lot of similarity between the white buffalo calf women teaching and Asia and Buddhism. And now, through the sacred ceremony, she's teaching them of this need to have a vision. Usually, you undertake a vision without food or water, the same way the Celts did, in an isolated area, because you have to face yourself. You have to be by yourself and you have to find out who you are. So the seeker would stay isolated until they would achieve their desired goal. And this could last 3 to 4 days. Now, this would vary depending on the tribe's culture, but the purpose of seeking the vision would be to, first of all, to produce a spirit helper, a spirit guide. But also, this visionary experience would let you know who you're meant to be, where you're supposed to go, what you're supposed to do. Men and women go on a vision quest, but not everyone gets one. Well, that's very interesting because, I mean, you can try it for 3 or 4 days, and if you get nothing, you know, you have to be worthy. And that's why most people would first go through the sweat lodge ceremony to purify themselves, strengthen themselves, to be ready for this vision quest and receive guidance. What makes the proper way for a vision quest is, and the Celts do the same. You don't go on a vision quest all on your own. You are accompanied by a druid for the Celts, but here you are accompanied by a holy man, because he's there to advise you, to give you, it's not just any isolated place, it's a place that is picked by the holy man. And once the vision is received, once the quest has been answered, it's not up to the seeker to analyze or interpret what he's seen. It's up to the holy man, right? So there's a trust in the wisdom of an older person that can interpret the symbols, the meaning of what has been received. So one of the most important reasons why you would go on a vision quest would be to understand better your link to the community. So this wasn't so much about you, this was about the role that you will play inside of that tribe. So I just gotta skip the... So yeah, so you are guided by a holy man. This holy man finds you where you're going to go. You remain alone. But in the Celt tradition, although the person, the seeker, thinks they're alone, the druid would observe his prodigy or his apprentice, making sure that the apprentice is safe. But at the time of this, the apprentice doesn't know about it. In the same way, the sacred place is picked by a holy man. If he knows that you're going to be out there facing the elements for 3 or 4 days, he's going to ensure that you're safe. They don't want you to die out there. Yeah. And so the seeker will stay in the sacred place and pray for this vision. And then as soon as the vision will come, he will return to the sweat lodge, and the seeker will tell all that he has seen, all that he has heard, so that the wise holy man can interpret the vision. The young person needs to find their purpose, their role in the community, and how to best serve his people. So it's about him, yes. But it's about including this person in our community. Now, how do we do that in this day and age? How do we, every tribe around the world has a rite of passage to manhood, or rite of passage for womanhood. And we have forgone all these things. When my brothers were younger, and remember there's a big age difference between me and them, they wore shorts everywhere. Right, like little cut-off pants above the knee, until they became men, and then they started wearing pants. The royalty in England still does that to their boys. There's still a sort of a rite of passage that exists just in the way that you dress. But how do we tell our young people that they are part of the community? When do we take the time to tell them they're important, they matter? Who's taking on the role of telling them how they could best serve the community? They see someone at school I remember when I had to go see this person who, you know, makes you fill out a question and is supposed to help you pick the right field of study or the right career that you should go to. And strangely enough, everybody where I attended school, which was a private school for girls, was due to go to science. And we later found out that this was being pushed because there wasn't enough girls in science and they wanted to raise the number. So they were told to encourage girls to go into science. Now, was that the best thing for me? Was that the best outcome? Obviously, science was great. I learned a lot. But was that what's best for me? No. If I could go back, find myself in high school, I would tell her, now, this is where you need to go. This is what you need to do. This is where you'll fit in. This is where everything will make sense to you, right? It would be in religious studies. It would be in symbolism. It would be so many other things than science. We tend to not prepare our youths to be a community. They're part of little things. They play soccer. They go to music. They're very busy. I'm not saying they're not busy. We're not just, you know, they're not just always sitting at home doing nothing, but they're doing things for them. But how does that then bring them back and say, you're part of this community. We want you here. You're important. We have roles for you to play and you can do those because you're brilliant. And that's based on your abilities, based on your qualities, based on your interests. This would be great for you. We kind of have completely lost touch with that. And we tend to think, oh, well, you know, they go to school, they'll figure it out, then they have lots of choices. It's true. We're honoring them having choices, but we're not letting them know that they're welcome here. It's important to let our youths know that they belong to something that is grander than they are. So when they feel lonely, when they feel like they just got a bad day and they got beaten, they know they got something to turn to. They know that something grander than themselves believes in them and is supporting them. We need to return a little bit more to this sense of community. This is why when people take classes from me, I welcome you to my tribe because you are now, I've been adopted into my family. You're part of my circle. This is why if you call, I will answer. If you need to talk, I will be there. We need to create a tribe for ourselves and the family and the community we interact with. We need to start seeing the ties of the things that are surrounding us more than just a paycheck or more than just a meeting. We need to see how connected we are and how present we should be for one another. And that's what comes from the teaching. The next sacred ceremony is the Sundance ceremony. It's practiced by Native and Americans and Aboriginal Canadians because, again, it's a plain thing in the Plains culture. And so in the territory, the provinces between Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, there's a lot of tribes that do the Sundance as well. The Sundance is a large community gathering of all the tribes in the same area coming together. And what's the purpose of the Sundance? The purpose is to pray for healing. And it's not just the people that are doing the dancing that are praying for healing. They're dancing to pray, to show their devotion to the community because the sick people cannot dance. And so they're actually partaking in the dance. And through their sacrifice of this dance that can last 3 or 4 days, they're sacrificing their energy, their efforts. So their prayers are heard for the people requiring healing. So they're doing something for someone who cannot. During the Sundance ceremony, there'll be traditional drums. There'll be a sacred flyer. There'll be the ceremonial pipe, some fasting involved. But it's a very grueling ordeal for the dancer. It's a physical and spiritual test that they're offering the sacrifice for the people in need. And I won't explain all of the details of the Sundance, but it is one of the most important ceremony practiced by the Lakota. and nearly all the Plain Indians. And it's a time of renewal for the tribe, the people, and the earth. And that's why they get together. So it could be a gathering of many bands coming together. So it's not just a village, it's several groups coming together, right? So it creates a huge, huge amount of people. And this could go on for 4 days. The idea is that the healthiest one would offer their energy through the dance and the sacrifice to heal and disperse the energy to the ones that are sick and needed healing. Again, before participating in the sun dance, you would purify yourself in the sweat lodge before the dance. Each dancer has, again, a mentor to help him through the ceremony. Remember, it's 4 days long. I don't know, but you know, some of us may have gone out dancing, and we go out dancing one night, and we take the whole week to recuperate. But this is a 4 day, sun up till sundown, extremely grueling. And it's not like you can take a whole lot of breaks, and you're in it because you're trying to manifest a healing for someone who needs it. The mentor is usually a holy man or someone who has already performed the dance, and they can guide the young man through what he's about to do. Like I said, I can't describe exactly what takes place during the dance, as we're respecting the edict from the elders. But extremely difficult. Take my word for it. I'm glad mostly it was men performing these dances, because I'm not sure I would have taken part in that. And I love dancing, but this would have been a bit much for me. And then we get to the ceremony of making relatives. And again, it's done with the sacred pipe. This pipe is the key to everything. White Buffalo Calf Woman was using the sacred pipe that she'd given to the Lakota people. And she, at that point, when she's giving them the pipe, she's addressing them as brothers and sisters. And strangely, a lot of Christian people will say brother or sister, right? But amongst the natives, they also had this naming of you're my brother, you're my sister. Recognizing that beyond the skin, beyond where you're from, beyond the blood that runs through your veins, inside you're a soul, you're a spirit, and we, through that, are united and we're linked and we're brothers and sisters. So White Buffalo Calf, and these are recorded words that have been passed down through generation, she said, "I am proud to become a member of your family, a sister to you all. I represent the Buffalo tribe. When you are in need of buffalo meat, smoke this pipe and ask for what you need, and it shall be granted." She then instructed them how to treat relatives in sharing and reciprocity. Sorry. And this is where the four values come from, right? It's through her teaching that those became the four most important values of the Lakota people. She taught them to honor the earth, the animals, and the children's, and spirit being, and the force that is held behind being one family. She said that we are all united into a network of relationship. And if we can recognize this relationship, then we can see that we are all united. So this ritual was first used to make peace between the Lakota and the Rahi people. And making the Rahi relatives ensured the peace between the tribes, because now we're becoming brothers and sister. So this is a mirror of the relationship that the Lakota people have with Wakantanka, the Great Spirit. We're in a relationship with nature, we're in a relationship with animals, and so therefore we're in a relationship with humans as well. So this first ceremony took several days, because at the end of the ceremonies, you are now part of this family, and you had your past troubles to leave them behind, because new relations are starting, and so we're starting fresh. It's a new beginning. It's a forgiveness ritual. And once you're part of the family, you then have to be at peace with each other. You have to apologize to each other. And this, surprisingly enough, is something that is the Huna principle in Hawaii, the Ho'oponopono method of acknowledging how you through your actions, your words, or your thoughts have harmed someone, and you apologize, and you're taking the ownership, and you're recognizing that you played a role in the conflict, and you're apologizing for it. Hence why the apologies need to be accepted. And as the apology is accepted, you then reflect on your own actions and your thoughts and your words, and you take responsibility for how you harmed this relationship. This beautiful exchange can take quite some time. And that's why this ceremony, the first one that ever took place, took several days. But it's the making relatives is basically a forgiveness ritual. Now, we get into the female puberty ceremony, which more was the passing rite for young women into womanhood. This rite was performed at the time that the young girl would have her first period. And recognizing that the ability to create life was a sacred thing, a sacred process. So it's not about, oh, you might be pregnant now. Here's some condoms, here's the pill, don't get pregnant. It was, oh my gosh, you may create life. And so we will honor this process. I know that there's a lot of false information out there about how Native American women or Canadian Native women were loose morals and would often be very liberal in having sex with people. This is actually quite the opposite. You know, there's propaganda, right? There's people trying to spread rumors about someone or something, and much like the Nazis did about the Jews, they're spreading a bunch of lies, and then eventually people, not knowing any better, start believing these things. Virginity and chastity was highly valued amongst the Native tribe. It was something that was highly respected, and so a woman becoming of age to procreate and create life was something that was revered and beautiful and magnificent and highly respected. It also meant that she became of marrying age eventually. And so she was offered a ceremony to purify herself in preparation to becoming a woman and bearing children. And the family will build her a tipi, right? So a tent, and gather all the necessary objects for the ritual that was conducted by the holy man. On the day of the ceremony, the holy man would come and purify the space. Sorry, I'm trying to skip the parts where I'm not supposed to share. The buffalo skull was the central objects of the ceremony, and it was colored in a certain color to represent this coming of age. The holy men would involve this young girl in making her part of the entire community as a woman. So she was recognized by everyone. It was an honorable thing. And then a feast was held and a giveaway took place. So this is when all the members of the family of this young girl would offer things to be taken as a gift. So you weren't receiving the gifts, you were giving the gifts for, in a way, they're thanking everyone for accepting her as a woman amongst them. So she's no longer a child, she's becoming a woman. And they're sharing whatever they have to give to be grateful that she's accepted and being honored as a woman in their tribe. So it's so reverse than our traditions, because we get baptized, we get Christian, we get confirmed, we get bar mitzvah, we got all these ceremonies of coming of age, and they're expecting, I came of age, and they're expecting to receive something. In this case, she's actually being grateful for being accepted. It's such a different way of thinking that you need to wrap your head around it and ask yourself, so maybe we should try that. Being grateful for being honored and recognized for who we are, our abilities, capabilities, and not expect something because of it, but simply being grateful that someone recognizes it. Now, there's another sacred ceremony, which is a little bit different. It's called the throwing of the ball. The throwing of the ball in the old days was played with four teams, and it had one ball. The original ball was made of buffalo hair, covered with a buffalo hide, so it wasn't huge. The ball was painted. So nowadays they're using beaded balls and things like that in the sacred ceremonies, but back then it was just a plain ball with buffalo hair in the center and a hide, but it was painted red with a blue dot at each quarter. So basically the four direction. And two circles were painted around the ball, symbolizing coming together of the heaven and the earth, right? So we always have the four direction, but we also have the sky and the earth, bringing it all in together. The ball became sacred because of purification process offered to Wakantaka, the Great Spirit. The ball was said to be given to man by the buffalo, symbolizing that we inherited the earth, and so therefore we need to protect it. A young girl was chosen to throw the ball, and she stood at the center of a very large circle with the four direction clearly marked. Now, first, she threw the ball to the west, and then the ball was brought back to her, and then she would throw the ball in every other direction. It used to be quite an honor to be the one who would catch the ball. Much like, you know, when you're at a wedding and the bride throws the bouquet, if you catch the bouquet, there's a specific meaning to it. It means that you should be getting married in the next year. If you were able to catch the ball, that means that all of the power of creation was in your hand. And so you became the keeper until the game was played again. The reason why a ball is thrown in all the direction is to represent that the Great Spirit is in all those directions. Why was it a young girl at the center of the circle? Because she symbolizes innocence and purity. And so this innocence and purity is giving you a chance to hold this power. Oh my God, look at the time. The final sacred ceremony is the soul keeping. Sacred white buffalo calf women told the Lakota that when they die, their soul must be purified so they can reunite with the Great Spirit. The way that they purify the soul is that a lock of the hair from the departed person was taken and held with pieces of burning sweetgrass to purify it. And then it was wrapped into a sacred buckskin and the sacred pipe was smoked. This bundle, the sacred bundle, called the soul bundle, was kept in a special place in the soul's keeper, usually a relative. And the keeper of the soul vowed to live a harmonious life, until the soul could be released. And that was usually about a year's worth time. So, person dies, there's a bundle that is created, and for a whole year, you're the keeper of the soul, as they don't go into the light just yet. And it's you that you're keeping the soul by being a good person, having good thoughts, having good actions, and good words with others. It's a heavy responsibility for the soul keeper, and it's a whole year's worth. So the ceremony would be then to release the soul in a specific way. And the soul would then be released and be caught in the air and sent traveling down the Milky Way to reach the old woman who judges each soul. If she judged you worthy, she would send the soul right away to the Great Spirit. But unworthy souls were sent to the left, and where they remain until they could become purified and join the Great Spirit. what would that look like? What would that mean? It means that a soul that's not purified is still living with regret. It's still living with anger. It's got emotions that are tying them to their path, their life that has ended. In the James Redfield novels, he explains that that's the kind of hell, because you keep reliving these incidents that are tormenting you. The times where you hurt someone, the times where you committed bad actions. And until you, as the soul, are able to change the way you act, you're able to change a different path, then you're freed from this space and you're able to go into the light, into joining the Great Spirit. So that's how you would purify your soul. Whatever is holding you back, you keep reliving it over and over until you finally change, until you finally grow, and you become better because you finally made different choices. And that, even though you're not in a physical form anymore, is still, because you're stuck in that reel, you don't even realize you're not alive. You still think it's all real. So it's once you grow out of this patterns, and that you make different choices, that you're all of a sudden free. One of the funny things is, I've addressed this before, somebody on a TV show represents the devil, and he says, there's no jail, there's no locked doors, everybody's free to leave whenever they want. But they're trapping themselves there. It's their own guilt, it's their own ego that keeps them there. I'm just sitting down there watching all this, and I've had enough, so I left. So white buffalo calf women is telling us it's very, very important that we clear our soul from anything that could hold us back. That we, although there is a ceremony, the ceremony does not guarantee you to going to straight to Great Spirit. It's really the soul that needs to purify itself. How do you purify your soul? You purify your soul through your everyday life. And so if you live a good life, if you keep your soul clean, at the end, you will be able to just be free and go. Now, I want to go over the references before I run out of time. If you want to know more, really, one of the best book was The Sacred Pipe, Black Elk's Account of the Seven Rites of the Oglala Sioux, University of Oklahoma Press in 1953. Native Nations by Nancy Bonvillain, Pearson's Education Press, 2001. Dee Brown's Folkstale of the American Native American, Henry Holt Publishing, 1993. Native American Stories by Joseph Brukak Fulcrum, Publishing House, 1991. Native American Stories of the Sacred, Evan Pritchard, 2008. Mythology of the Americas by Cody Berlin, Irene Nicholson, and Harold Osborne by Hamlin, 1970. Ascended Masters Oracle Cards by Doreen Virtue, A House, 2007. And The Book of the Goddesses by Chris Walder, Abrams Publishing, 2006. And Goddess, A World of Myth and Magic by Burleigh Merton by Barefoot Books, 2003.